Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other things that probably aren't that consequential, at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Jack Jack and Melody.
Yay.
Hi.
Lame.
Wow.
I got yelled at for my last intro, so.
You're going to get yelled at for this one, too.
All right. Seems to be, like, the course of my day.
Wow. Well, as you all can tell, Melody Lauer's here, so that's good. Yay! Oh, and someone's breathing directly into the microphone. I bet it's Melody Lauer. So, I'm so, wow, the look she's giving me right now, I wish you all could see, but it's radio. So, Jack, don't
Jasmine?
Do that. Jesus. Hey, Jack, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors. Or at least, it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night, and TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 night vision goggle to the IR Patrol thermal monocular and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or a little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC, now, with financing. Own or finance the night. Ah, so today we are joined by one of my very favorite people in the industry that I argue with constantly, Mr. Rob Pincus. Rob, how are you doing?
Hey, man. It is great to be here. I'm doing really well. I'm out in Silverton, Colorado, one of my happy places in the world.
Oh, yeah? What's new out on the western side of the country? Anything good, exciting, or...
Well, we're hoping that the results of the election here in Colorado are going to make it easier to get rid of the post-Sandy Hook aftermath with the magazine ban that is one of the most ineffective and ridiculous knee-jerk reaction gun restrictions we've seen in the last couple of decades.
Yep.
So, just hoping that things play out well here as far as that goes. And other than that, it's beautiful. It's autumn. It's snowing in the mountains. And it's a good time to be out here.
Perfect. Perfect. So for those that don't know, and I can't imagine that many people listening don't know who you are, but for those that don't, just say who you are, what do you do, and your background a little bit, and we'll hop right into today's show.
Rob Pincus, age almost 45. I am a personal defense educator. My specialty and kind of area of practice has generally been defensive firearms instruction, contextually appropriate across the spectrum from military special operations all the way down to first-time gun owners and family firearm safety seminars. I'm in a company that certifies other instructors to teach our programs all around the world and get to travel around the world and do my thing as well. Run Personal Defense Network, which is educational online, started as a DVD series, but now we're about 90% online with videos and articles, lots of them available for free from lots of experts, not just me, in all areas of personal defense and security. And here we are today.
Nice. Well, and to speak to the PDN DVDs just real quick, a lot of the show regulars that have been on have done DVDs with you, too. I know William April and Claude Werner have both, if I remember correctly, and there's some others as well, correct?
We have had, I think, something close to 20 outside collaborators come in and do instructive DVDs in different areas of expertise. So we have certainly William April with his kind of mindset and understand the criminal, the violent criminal actor stuff. Claude Werner came in, and his specialty, of course, he's known for a long time as a smoke-nose revolver specialist, but lately he's been talking a lot about decision-making. We've done some great work there on our distance education side that people are about to see in early 2017. Tom Givens, with his lessons from the street, some of the best data that we have in the personal defense world that's not sort of skewed towards military and law enforcement. He's done that presentation for us in DVD form.
Yeah.
And really, if you look at what we've done from 2005 to 2015-16 with the DVD series, we produced over 100 DVDs, and there's a little bit of a snapshot of sort of that decade's worth of some of the top names in the industry, as far as I'm concerned, helping us out. Mike Janich with stick work and knife work at the very beginning. Mike Sieglander is in there as another defensive firearms instructor. It's not just my program. It's not just the combat-focused shooting program that we represent. We've got a lot of diversity in there, so I'm really proud of the work that we've done with that DVD series and the online work.
Well, and I've gone out and taken a class from you. I'm personal friends with some of the people that, you know, you've either had contribute or instructors of yours. You know, guys like Mike Sieglander at Don Edwards. I just spent a couple days out with Don down in Florida. So, a lot of different looks at things, and I think it's really worth checking out for people that are listening. What I wanted to talk about this show, though, and this is something that I don't think you are given nearly enough credit for, because I think you're probably the, if not the best, one of the best people in our industry at doing this, but is actually engaging, not the choir. So, like, anti-gunners or people that are undecided about gun stuff in, like, actual meaningful conversation that, doesn't sound like two dogs barking at each other angrily, but there's actual, you know, information exchange. I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on, I mean, what got you to where you were, one, comfortable doing that or was trying to do that, and two, how do you think we could get more people thinking that way?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I think it's incredibly important, you know, especially in the election year, in the post-election kind of fallout, regardless of which way the White House goes.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I think which way that the Congress and the Senate go, we really do have a big discussion on our hands about guns in the future. And we've had it. We've been engaged in it for decades. It's mostly gone our way, honestly, especially at the federal level, in most states. I mean, if you look at the landscape of concealed carry rights and gun rights in general, we're in much better position than we were in the early 90s, certainly in the mid-90s under the assault weapons ban, the federal assault weapons ban that sunset, thankfully, in 2004. But I think a big part of that is education, and education through discussion, through, you know, classic argument, you know, logical discussions of points, starting from a common ground or a shared premise, is really how we get there. And how I got comfortable doing that, I don't know. You know, I certainly don't say no to media opportunities. I say yes 99.9% of the time. Historically, I take the opportunities to talk, even if it's a landscape that a situation where it's going to be tilted against a pro-gun or a pro-right to keep and bear arms, a pro-self-defense, a pro-teaching kids how to shoot. You know, when I meet the counterpoint on a lot of shows in let's say, the liberal media, say NPR, or, even something which is much more, you know, entertainment than information, something like The Daily Show, when I get the opportunity to do those things, I'm really quick to jump on them, because it's so rare to see firearms represented or firearms owners represented in the way that I think we should be, or the way that I personally want to be represented or seen by people who aren't gun owners or people who are on the fence about gun ownership. And I think that's the most important audience to meet. So I'm really anxious to do it. So I've gotten a lot of practice over it. And I've certainly put myself in positions like the Valhalla Training Center, which was associated out here in southwestern Colorado with a very high-end upscale resort. We were located just outside of Telluride, a very, you know, almost notoriously libertarian, liberal town.
Right.
And being in that environment forces one to have the conversation again and again and again. As I travel across Europe, as I spend a lot of time in Manhattan or Chicago or L.A., I'm having this conversation constantly with people who honestly don't have a really good idea of what the average gun owner looks like, or what the average, especially responsible gun owner who's training and taking the responsibility of personal defense seriously, looks like or lives like. And I think it's important that they understand what it's really about, so that they can make educated opinions when it comes to informing their elected officials or even casting ballots on referendums in their states.
Well, and so we got about a minute left in this segment. We got to go to break, and then I want to get into this a little bit more in depth. And I'm going to make a statement. I'd like for you to either agree or disagree, and then we'll talk about it next segment. Would you say that generally when gun owners are represented in the media at all, they are represented in a negative light just based off of who they find to talk about most of the time?
I think that a lot of people that make it on the camera, make it into print, getting quotes, represent an extreme view of firearms ownership. And quite often people are saying things in those environments that they know would get a round of applause at the local IDPA match or get a high five in the gun shop or that are going to be quoted in a gun forum.
Right.
And if you're talking to that audience, you're probably not speaking well to the audience that's listening.
Makes sense. We're talking with Rob Pincus from PDN and ICE Training, and right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by 6 Hour, now with more options. We're not all the same, and our carry gun shouldn't have to be either. 6 Hour gives you choices, and with more models than the Bible's got Psalms, it's never been easier to find a 6 Hour that fits your needs. From the extremely versatile striker-fired P320 with modular grip frame, to the Legion Series P226, the single-stack P225A1, or the entry-level SP2022, 6 Hour makes a model that's right for you. Just don't ask for Callahan full-bore auto lock. They don't make one of those yet. 6 Hour, when it counts. So we're talking with Rob Pincus about firearms ambassadorship and all sorts of other things. And I was going to, before the break, Rob, we were talking about how you had this conversation with a lot of people. Melody's been working with us for like the last year now, and we get to travel around a lot together. One of the things that is really interesting to me is how willing she is to talk to other people about what we do and how we do it, which is something I've always been hesitant to do. Let me ask you this, Melody. Have you always been kind of that way, open about that? And then I want to get Rob's take on that.
Yes, I've always been pretty open because I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of in what we do or, you know, and in the responsible side of it. And I think that our ambassadorship is very important.
Right. Right. As far as, what do you think, Rob? Should I just get over myself and be more willing to talk to strangers about that? Do you think that would be helpful, or is that something more people should do? Where do we go?
I think Melody's a lot more pleasant than you. I mean, if I see two of you sitting around in a restaurant, I think Melody just obviously is much more approachable and friendlier than you. So I think
well,
it's
thank
good
you, Bob.
That she's the one. If you guys are out and about, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But what I think really what's important here is that
Jack, you don't look friendly at all.
No, I feel hurt.
I wasn't going to bring Jack into the conversation.
Yeah.
I think honestly, what's more important is not that we are. I think most gunners are comfortable with themselves. I think we're proud. I think there's, as Melody said, nothing to be embarrassed by. I think the wall is our opinion. And I say the community, our general opinion. If you look at the forums, if you look at a lot of the social media, if you listen to the conversation, there's a lot of there's a lot of hyperbole, there's a lot of negativity, there's a lot of dislike really expressed for someone that doesn't share our opinion. And this is pretty universal in the state of America today, is there's a dislike for people that don't share your political opinion or your religious belief or maybe even your background, your social structure. And it's that dislike that puts up the wall. See, I don't inherently dislike or automatically disrespect someone that holds a different opinion from me on firearms. I want to have a conversation with them. I may come to a point where I don't like them as a person, but still respect their opinion. Yeah. I may come to a point where I like them as a person, but don't respect their opinion and certainly don't agree with it. Or I may find that I like the person and I respect their opinion, even though I don't agree with it. And I found that to be the case many times. So that may sound really, you know, lofty and sort of holier than thou, but I think that really is where this starts, is let's separate. You know, we have this concept we throw out all the time, respectful irreverence. let's respect the person until they prove they don't deserve it, and let's challenge their opinion. Let's be irreverent towards their opinion and say, okay, I can meet this person at the bar. I can meet this person on the airplane. I can meet this person, you know, at the dinner party as an equal, as a human being with an opinion, and go into a conversation without a already negative attitude, without an already disgusted look on my face, without a self-righteous, you know, shall not be infringed pounding on the dinner table,
right,
as if they are, you know, if they held that opinion, if that mattered, if me pounding on the table and saying shall not be infringed mattered to them, they would already hold the same opinion I do.
Yeah.
So I think we have to approach people as potentially worthy of respect, even though they don't agree with us on guns. And I think that's incredibly hard for a lot of gun owners to do.
Well, and it seems like, too, that just, you know, going back to, and you sort of alluded to this, human nature in general, is that oftentimes when we find someone that either holds a different opinion than us, or maybe is using different words to describe the same opinion that we hold, or any, you know, various combination of this, we end up talking past one another and there's no dialogue, you know, at all. I mean, and I'll give an example that gun people might understand. Like you and I, we're friends. We disagree on certain very small minutiae of training that at the end of the day doesn't actually matter at all. I don't think, and I think you'd probably agree with me. But, you know, the thing is that when you and I disagree, we have a conversation about it, and, you know, maybe one of us gets annoyed at the other one or whatever, but we're still friends at the end of the day, and I still, you know, still respect you, and I'm, you know, you probably respect me about as much as I deserve, but you know what I mean, though? It doesn't seem like there's enough of that.
We can disagree on the value of, you know, timer drills is one of the obvious ones that I think we disagree about. And it really doesn't matter. Your approach to training is going to be your approach to training. My approach is going to be my approach. And when we teach classes, our students are both going to get value, and they're going to get different value. But here we are, you know, talking about gun ownership and ambassadorship. And, you know, you've invited me onto your radio show, and you're welcome on my range at any time. So I think there's a mutual respect, even though we may passionately disagree about some of that minutia. Inside of gun world, that happens all the time. To be quite honest, I get more pushback in, you know, from pro gun people about a lot of my opinions than I ever hear from middle of the road America or anti gun people.
Yep.
And I'm talking about political opinions, not just training opinions. Obviously, someone who doesn't, you know, have a vote on gun, somebody who doesn't own a gun, isn't going to care about timer drills versus subjective cognitive drills. But somebody that does own guns is going to care passionately about whether or not I will go on a, you know, liberal-leaning media show and not pound on the table and not, you know, generally make an ass of myself or quote, you know, obscure legal terminology or cite some legal opinion that, again, to me is like the 10th step in the conversation. If somebody isn't even sure that guns have a place in society, quoting, you know, the Heller case isn't going to matter to them.
Right.
It just isn't going to matter. And no matter how important it is and how valid it is legally and how important it is when we're in a court case or when we're arguing for a new law or to rescind an old law that is, you know, in breach of the Constitution, it doesn't matter to the person at the dinner party that it doesn't – that might think I'm actually reckless to have a gun in a home with children. And let's have that conversation about how there are responsible ways to own a gun and have kids in the house with a gun and to make sure that, you know, you're doing everything you can to prevent an accident and prevent negligence and to educate the kids and to be safe and not, you know, a 9-year-old girl on, you know, American survivalist talking about shooting ISIS in the middle of its face, because that's not what the typical average responsible gun owner with kids is promoting inside of their home.
Right.
Well, yeah, and I it's really interesting that you say that, because that's kind of what started the whole kerfluffle over what I was teaching a year ago, and it was just, and kind of what started the whole armed parent thing that John and I have been doing is, you know, that image that just because we have, or I had a gun in a home with my child, I was irresponsible, and then having to start that conversation of this is how you can do it responsibly. And it was nice to see how many people kind of came out of the woodwork saying, you don't look like the typical gun owner. And at the same time, kind of not necessarily building a bridge, because I think I made more enemies than friends, but at least starting that conversation on a much more national level.
Yeah, it's incredibly important. I think that may be the crux of the conversation for the average non-gunner. What I found is that the issue of kids and guns is a really hot button issue whenever it comes up, and whether it's, you know, the 4-H club or the Eddie Eagle program being part of a school curriculum, or parents owning guns and having guns staged inside the home for defense. That is a big thing that's on the mind. And honestly, it's a great touch-button issue for the anti-gunners, right? So someone who's already set their agenda, and I'm not as interested in talking to anti-gunners, quite frankly, because, again, it just becomes this kind of, you know, a rally factor, talking past each other, you know, talking points, not really a conversation.
Right.
But the problem is those talking points from the anti-gunners are influencing the American middle ground. So when you have our side, when the leadership of our side is again, you know, pounding the podium, talking about Sean not being infringed, and saying things like the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, despite empirical evidence that that's not the case, that you know, unarmed good guys stop bad guys a lot, and there's other things that stop bad guys besides just guns. When you hear rhetoric like that on our side, and you put that up against a picture of a, you know, or the image, the mental image that's created in an interview or an article of a 9-year-old kid that got shot by their father on a hunting trip, or you put that up with the image of a 6-year-old toddler who killed their 8-year-old brother because they got into their mom's purse and fired a gun. Those two images, which one is more emotionally compelling? A 240-year-old document that's being quoted, you know, with no real contextual relevance to the person who's hearing it, or a parent thinking about their 9-year-old getting shot by their neighbor because the parents of the neighbor was an irresponsible firearms owner. When you think about it, the emotions tied to children, it makes sense that that's a hot-button issue, and I think it's an important issue for us to address and for us to be willing to talk about as responsible gun owners.
Right. Let me interrupt there because we got to go to break right now. We're talking with Rob Pincus. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scattergun since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Rob Pincus about ambassadorship, or really just about how to talk to people that maybe don't already agree with us. And you said something interesting before the break, Rob, as far as, you know, what creates the more emotionally compelling image for the middle ground, you know, when we, you know, say something like shall not be infringed, or reference, you know, the Constitution or some obscure law, or when anti-gunners take an example of negligence, which is really what it is, and put that up in front of people. I guess my question is, do we need to get better at marketing ourselves and our ideas to the undecideds?
Yeah, I think, you know, at an extreme, teaching is selling, right? You want to get someone to invest their intellectual energy. You want to get somebody to invest their emotional drive, maybe, to help you spread the word or to change their lifestyle. And you have to be compelling to do that. So you have to have logical reasons that appeal to them to get them to change their opinion or to even form an opinion. And we're talking about the American middle ground that doesn't own guns and doesn't really have a dog in the fight, but sometimes gets pressed to express an opinion or to cast a vote. We have to get them over to our side. And the arguments that we may love or that we may, you know, have that may resonate at that, you know, family firearms picnic at the local range, those arguments won't resonate with the person that didn't already choose to come into the gun shop. Those arguments may not resonate with the person that didn't already choose to own a firearm.
Right.
So thinking about it from their perspective, again, let's start it from not their ignorant, you know, weak and they're sheep and they're liberals and they're this and they're that. How about we start it from they just aren't educated. You know, they may be technically ignorant. They may just not have had the opportunity to have a discussion with somebody who can explain to them what a different perspective is.
Right.
And explain to them in a way that is emotionally compelling and intellectually captivating. You know, that's what's important, and not captivating to us. And it's that preaching to the choir. It's the echo chamber. It's the soundbite. It's the talking point. I think that's what gets us into trouble with the American middle ground. We're not going to change Feinstein's opinion. We're probably not going to change Hillary Clinton's opinion. But there's somebody living in southern New Jersey who didn't grow up with guns, you know, I grew up in southern New Jersey, grew up with guns. There's a whole bunch of people that didn't grow up with guns that don't even realize that maybe you can legally own a gun.
Yeah.
You know, I just wrote a letter of recommendation for a good family friend who works in the gun shop, works in the gun industry. They have a family member at an NRA board of directors. They're probably going to get their concealed carry permit very quickly here in one of the counties in southern New Jersey. And there's a lot of people around the country that think that that's impossible or that can't happen. And every time I teach in New Jersey, I get, you know, the social media. What are you going there for? Those people should just move, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, if we start seeing people getting carry permits, it's because they stayed there and fought the good fight, and they've been having these conversations with the people in the seats of power about responsible gun ownership and the right to own a gun for personal defense and to carry it in a public space for decades, fighting that good fight.
Well, and it seems like, you know, so like another example, that's California, which has had some horrible, horrible, you know, gun laws perpetrated on the people that live there in recent, you know, memory. And a lot of people are like, well, you need to move or whatever. And I'm not whole, you know, if someone decides to move out of that environment, I completely understand why. I personally wouldn't want to live there. But the people that are there and do have to go through that and are trying to change it are the ones that get things done, not the people that stick their head in the sand and, you know, I'm going to ignore it or it's not my problem or whatever. That if that thought process had been prevalent, we wouldn't have carry permits and almost, you know, I mean, there's the option to get one everywhere now. You know, whereas if you look back in the early 80s, it was like Florida and three other states, if I remember correctly, you know.
That had shall issue. Yeah. And in fact, the big part of that is putting your head in the sand. It was, if you go back to the reason we had the assault weapons ban, quite honestly, was because the community of gun owners was largely fighting, quote unquote, fighting the fight with ideas like shooting heritage and shooting sports and the hunting traditions of America. You know, that's the only rallying cries we had, was we got to defend our hunting heritage kind of thing. And now looking back, I mean, it was ludicrous to suggest that the Second Amendment was about hunting or about shooting sports, and to pretend that if we softened the image of guns somehow, we were going to change the opinion of the American middle ground against, you know, coming out of the aftermath of the assassinations in the 1960s, you know, Martin Luther King and Kennedy, and then, you know, Reagan getting shot in the early 80s. When you looked at racial violence in the 60s and going into the 70s, you looked at a lot of problems that we had in that era that obviously had ramifications in 1968 with big legal changes, 1986 with big legal changes. We weren't going to win that fight with hunting and shooting tradition. You know, if you look at the SHOT Show, right, the National Shooting Sports Foundation is what puts that on. Next week, we'll be participating in the National Association of Sporting Goods Wholesalers Show, which is a giant gun show for people who stock thousands of guns and tens of thousands of rounds of ammunition at a turn. That's what that is. But the name of the show is the National Association of Sporting Goods Wholesalers, because sporting goods was how guns were being kind of marketed or hidden through the 80s when that organization was formed.
Right.
So we've learned that. We've learned really fast and really hard in the 1990s that this is about the Second Amendment. It's about personal defense and not defense of our way of life. It's about defense of our country if need be. And that message resonates much, much more with the American middle ground. Why do you have this tool that could kill your neighbor's kid? Oh, because you may need to defend your life, and your life and your family's life is worth defending. Our way of life and our country are worth defending, and responsibly owning a gun and training to use a gun in that way. Also, by the way, you can go competition shooting, or you can go fun shooting with your family, or you can go hunting if you'd like that too, but that's not the reason for
right.
the Second Amendment, and that's obviously not the reason for the majority of gun ownership in our country, especially today, but I think historically all along.
Well, in you know, and I want to just backtrack slightly, because we both of us have said it, and I want to clear this point up, because I already know someone will listen to that sound bite and miss the point. Personally, I agree with the shall not be infringed. And I think that, you know, pretty much any restriction at this point is not what was intended when the Constitution was written. I'm pretty sure you and I have spoken about it. I'm pretty sure you're the same way, too. You're just saying that's not necessarily the way to market it to people.
Right. We're not going to jump from where we are in 2016 to Sanaa being friends. Like, that's not a jump that's going to happen. There's no president. There's no elected body of the legislature. There's no Supreme Court that's going to be seated in the next, you know, series of months or out of this election cycle that's going to jump back to shall not be infringed.
Right.
We had some things that have been put in place a long time ago, background checks, the FFL, you know, federal firearms licensing procedure. The individual states have different rules, obviously, that are going to need to be walked back over time if we ever think we're going to see shall not be infringed. I think that anybody will make an argument. I don't know of anybody in modern times, no matter how devout a gun owner they are, how, you know, a disciple of the Second Amendment they feel like they are, do you really want to say that the violent felon who's done multiple prison terms that has gotten out and shown a recidivism, has shown a propensity to not care about other people and will hurt them, or do you want them to be able to legally own a firearm? I don't. Do you take someone who's mentally incapable of the maturity and the intellectual level of controlling themselves and being responsible with a gun, or someone who is mentally adjudicated as a threat to others or shown a propensity to others, do you want them to be able to legally own a gun? I don't. So when we say shall not be infringed and we pound on the table, I don't think any of us really mean that. I'll say right now on the radio that I don't, because I don't mean the violent felon should be able to legally own a gun. I don't mean that the person who is mentally incapable of the intellectual capacity to control a gun or control themselves or understand the ramifications of negligent gun use should legally own a gun. I don't think that's true. So the shall not be infringed really becomes just this soundbite that has to be interpreted legally as all of the Constitution, as all of the Bill of Rights does. So I think that's important to also state, because that's a reasonable conversation that some people are afraid to have. They're afraid to say that because, oh, it's a slippery slope, or, oh, you're letting them get their foot in the door. Or, no, it's common sense. And when somebody says common sense gun control, maybe that's what they mean. And we're not giving them a chance to explain what they mean because we think they mean Einstein or Clinton doing an Australian gun grab.
Well, I think the issue becomes, too, though, is that, and you and I have gone back and forth on this before, too, you and I can use the same word and have completely different meanings. And I think that historically, when someone has said something like common sense gun control, you know, whatever the good intentions are attached to that, historically, that's not been what's shown, you know.
I think the problem is the politicians may not mean that, but again, the American middle ground hears
right.
Keep violent felons from legally owning guns. And that's where we need to have an educated discussion. You know, the gun show loophole. We need to have an educated discussion about private gun transfers and me being able to gift. My daughter just turned 21.
Yeah.
So naturally, I got her a gun that's appropriate for concealed carry. So the me being able to gift her a gun is, quote unquote, the gun show loophole.
Well,
right?
and hold that thought, because
we live in the same state.
Well, I was going to say, hold that thought, Rob, because we got to go to break. Right now, we're talking with Rob Pincus. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Levent, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifle accessories. Daniel Levent, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz Light ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now is a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners. If you go to the Surefire.com web store and enter the discount code, all the lumens, you can get 30% off everything they got there except for suppressors and batteries. That is ALLTHELUMENS, no space, all the lumens at Surefire.com. So we're talking with Rob Pincus. Now, before the break, Rob, I interrupted you. You were, you know, using the buzzword that gets thrown around a lot, like the gun show loophole, and talking about how you just gifted your 21-year-old daughter a gun that was appropriate for concealed carry. And that's what the gun show loophole is, you know, at least how most people describe it. Or something like that.
Yeah, it's private transfers. You know,
right.
That's what we're talking about. And now the new thing you say is the online loophole. The online loophole is you want to buy a gun that I have and I send it to a dealer in your state and that dealer transfers it to you, or if we live in the same state and private transfers are allowed, we meet up at a, you know, park and I look at your driver's license, maybe take a picture of it. You know, that's personally, that's my policy. And I've talked about this at personalnetwork.com, private transfers. If I'm going to sell a gun to a stranger, I like to see their concealed carry permit, or I like to see their driver's license. And if somebody isn't comfortable showing me who they are, well, then I'm not comfortable selling them a gun. And that's my private choice that I can make legally in many states as a resident in many, you know, different states over my lifetime. That's been legal almost all the time for me to do in my adult lifetime is do a private transfer. But that's presented as this evil, nefarious thing. And again, the American middle ground doesn't know any better, so they hear the soundbite. They assume that there's something nefarious about it because of the way it's presented, and we need to be prepared to have a real conversation and educate people about that. So what the politician may mean, what the person who is anti-gun may mean, and what the American middle ground hears and what we believe to be the truth are usually three different things.
Right.
And that's why having these conversations is so important. So, yeah, we talked about it in the last segment. I'm all for, like, constitutional carry. I'm a IRS grad. And we've got hundreds of people now certified to teach our introduction to concealed carry. And it qualifies for concealed carry permit education in, I don't know, something like 20-something states now. That program is incredibly important to me. It's incredibly powerful. I think it's a great way for people to get started in the process of training and practicing to carry a gun responsibly in the public space. But I advocate for constitutional carry. You know, I think, again, go back to Shuttle B. Burns, if you can legally own a gun in a state, you should be able to legally carry that gun in a state. The very first state that I could legally carry in was Vermont. You know, I went to college up there, so when I could legally carry a gun there before any place else that I lived, and there was no permit process. So that was pluses and minuses. In today's world, there were some municipalities that were still restricted. So some of the bigger cities in Vermont restricted your ability to carry a gun concealed because the state didn't have a permit process that was statewide. They just kind of said, okay, if you can legally own a gun, you legally carry it. And then the municipalities could ban that right. You had there was no reciprocity capable because you didn't have a permit, so you went to another state. There couldn't be reciprocity because you didn't have a permit. So there's some problems with the way constitutional carry works in a multi-state federal system.
Right.
You look at Arizona. Arizona now has constitutional carry, but you can also get a permit. And if you choose to get the permit, then you can have the reciprocity privileges. So there's a lot of issues around constitutional carry, but I'm a big fan. I think if we had a situation where people weren't given this magic piece of paper or this plastic card by the government that says you're now legal to carry and you've met all the requirements, I think people would actually train more. And while that may be counterintuitive or it may seem like wishful thinking to the anti-gunner, I think the truth is right now we give people that permit with a embarrassingly low standard in many states, and they don't feel like they should go train. And inside of the community, we're so politically backed into a corner that we just say, hey, it's your right. You can carry because it's your right. And I think the problem is we need to have the responsibility side go hand in hand with our rights. And again, not worry about the slippery slope. Not worry about, you know, what's going to be mandated by the government, but just, again, common sense. If you're going to carry a gun in the public space, we as gun owners should be encouraging you as a fellow gun owner to get training, to practice, and to be responsibly armed, not just exercising your rights.
Yeah. And that's, you know, certainly a fight that I have been having for the last couple of years with people. And it seems to, at least with the people that listen to my show, has gone pretty well. You know, making people understand that we owe it to ourselves, our family members, and everyone around us that if we're going to choose to go armed, then we need to be at the highest level of proficiency that we can be given our means and resources and whatever. You know, and that's different for everybody. What I can go do as, you know, this is my job, versus what the guy that works two jobs, you know, and has a family of three to support can go do, you know, is two different things. But it's still putting that effort in to be better than you were the day before and to be as safe as you can, I think, you know?
Yeah, I think meeting a level of skill, a level of ability to apply your skill and understanding what that level is, is inherent in choosing the arm inside your home or outside your home, in your workplace, wherever it is. I think that there are certainly going to be situations that would present themselves where you and I would both agree we are not capable of taking the shot that would need to be taken to make the world a better place. And we either have to change the circumstances so we can take that shot, move into a different position, get a different angle, get closer, or choose responsibly not to pull our gun out and shoot. And those, that situation exists for everybody carrying a gun. I don't care what your skill level is. You know, there is a place where you're not able to make the world better by pulling the gun out and pulling the trigger. Yeah. And as long as you understand where that place is, you're now responsibly armed in the public space. Expanding the circumstances under which you can use the gun to make the world a better place, that's the thing that is so resource dependent. And that's where, you know, what the standard is for that, I don't think there is one.
No,
I think as you described really well, there's a subjectivity to that. There's a, you know, how much resources, how much time, how much justification, how much interest do you have in expanding the circle under which you can use your gun to make the world better? That's a big question that can't be answered by me, the instructor. I think the student has to answer that, and then it's up to me and the programs and Personal Defense Network and what you guys do and everybody else we've talked about as instructors to provide the opportunities for people to get better within their context.
Right. So we're coming up towards the end of the show, Rob. Do you have any upcoming projects you want to talk about super quick, or any websites you want to direct people towards, or anything of that nature?
So do I use the promotional marketing voice? Personal Defense Network. Go ahead and check out all our hundreds of free articles and videos, and be consider being a premium member as well for extra access to even more great information.
Well, so like I use that voice so that people are very clearly being told that I'm being paid money to say what I'm saying right then.
There you go.
It's like a disclaimer that I don't have to disclaim. But yes, that was very good, Rob. You've practiced. Hey,
you do have great sponsors on this show, by the way. I've worked with several of those companies, and I own stuff from every company you're sponsored by. It's a good group of guys, so it's worth the promoting marketing voice that you throw at it.
Yeah.
For me, it's personaleventsnetwork.com. ICETraining.us is the place to go to check out the course calendar. Of course, we're making all the plans right now for the 2017 training pool. We'll start in Florida, as we always do, drive up the East Coast to England and drive out across the country and hit California and hit Oregon, hit Washington, and we'll make about 30 stops, and I'll probably do, I don't know, about 60, 70 courses again in 2017. So that's always big. I'm finishing up a new book. It was definitely time for a refresh. The last time I wrote a book just on the shooting skill set stuff, it was the Combat Focus Shooting Evolution book in 2010. So in 2017, people will see a new intuitive defense of shooting fundamentals book from me and IC Training Company. And those are kind of two big things. Of course, Avidity Arms, we launched, did a soft launch at SHOT Show and showed off the gun at NRA. We're going to be actually selling the gun to the wholesalers at the National Association of Sporting Goods Wholesalers show next week. So people will have the Avidity Arms PD-10 single-stack striker-fired 10-plus-1 self-defense and home defense and concealed carry type gun. They'll have that in their hands next year, so obviously really excited about feedback. You'll be getting one of the early test guns. We'll probably get that to you in December or January before we start shipping them. We're going to get some feedback from people like yourself who, you know, I do respect, who I think have a very valid opinion, but don't hold exactly the same opinions as me and certainly aren't in any way beholden or could even be the appearance or the articulation of being beholden to obligation to say it's good when it's not. So we're gonna get the gun in a lot of people's hands and really vet it. You know, the last thing I'm going to do is I've seen too many people, two decades in this industry, too many companies have talked about a gun that was never going to come out or talked about a gun as having features that it just don't exist or having a reliability level that doesn't even come close to. And I've seen way too many people write what I call the press release article on a gun and say, you know, here's the latest, greatest gun from this company. And then 6 or 8 or 10 months later, when the gun actually comes out, it's nowhere near what it was supposed to be. So we're actually telling people, you know, if you look out right there right now, if you do a Google search for Avidity PD-10, you're not going to see any articles that say anything except Rob Pincus and Avidity are building this gun, and here's what it's supposed to be, and here's what they intended to be, and here's what the process has been. We're not really, quote unquote, letting any press talk about the gun in any definitive way until they get their hands on it.
So, nice.
Looking forward to that playing out over the next year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to checking it out too, man. I appreciate you taking time out of your morning to talk to us. It's always a pleasure, Rob. I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure, man. Be safe, all right?
All right, thanks a lot, Jack, Melody, and John. I really appreciate everything you guys do and you having me on the show.
Yeah, no worries, man.
See you later, Rob.
I'll talk to you later. So, Anyway, make sure you guys check out our website, BallisticRadio.com. Like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.